Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, we have two guests, one in our studio. The Reverend Peter Dick is a pastoral minister at Provena Covenant Hospital in Urbana, Illinois. That's part of the Presence Health System. He's an ordained Mennonite minister. And Peter, how long have you been at Provena Covenant?
I started there in July of 1992.
And in addition to that is his profession, his calling, his occupation. He is voluntarily currently the president of the Funeral Consumers Association of Champaign County. We'll talk more about that in a minute. We also have on the phone today the executive director of the National Funeral Consumers Association, Josh Slocum. Welcome, Josh. Can you hear me all right on the phone?
Yes. Hi. Thank you.
And we're talking to you from what? Where in New York State?
No, actually Vermont, Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, Vermont.
And the organization is actually Funeral Consumers Alliance.
I said it wrong.
We've been an association, and now we're an alliance.
And I'm sure you'll explain the difference to us very soon. Josh, you've been the executive director of the alliance for how long?
Since 2003.
What is the Funeral Consumers Alliance? What are you concerned about?
Funerals. I tell people to think of us as if we were the consumer reports of the funeral business. We are a nonprofit organization with about 85 to 90 local, largely volunteer-run chapters, like the one that Peter is with, that do price surveys of funeral homes, offer educational seminars, literature to the public about end-of-life planning, in a way that's affordable and that fits families' taste, philosophy, religion. And we act as a lobbyist for consumer concerns when there are bills both at the state level and the federal level that affect end-of-life planning and specifically regulation of the funeral industry.
So as a sort of a spokesperson nationally for consumers, for people who eventually are dealing with the death of a loved one, tell us some of your successes over the years.
Well, we do work that is both sort of large on the policy scale, all the way down to really personal service with people who call. I'll give you a couple of examples. We are pushing a federal bill right now, H.R. 900, the Bereaved Consumers Bill of Rights Act, which, in a nutshell, would tighten up regulation on cemeteries nationwide. Currently, Federal Trade Commission has some authority over funeral homes, requires disclosure to consumers, itemized pricing, free choice in purchase. But these things don't apply to cemeteries. And, you know, consumers are at the mercy of a really fragmented regulatory system at the state level, which doesn't work very well. So we were asked to testify before a congressional subcommittee a couple of years ago for this bill. We're hoping that it will get picked up. And, you know, if we're not doing things like that, we get thousands of emails and calls from consumers every year. Everything from how can I find an affordable funeral home to complaints that they were overcharged. Recently, we helped a woman named Caitlin here in Vermont, whose mother had prepaid for a cremation with a national company that's known for very slick sales pitches on overpriced cremations. And when she died, when Caitlin's mother died, the company did not want to make good on its contract and wanted to charge the family $900 more to use a crematory here in Vermont rather than the original one that she'd signed up with several states away. And luckily, we were able to get that family a refund, and they were able to find a locally run crematory that took very good care of them. But the people who think to complain about how they're treated in the funeral business are rare. A lot of people are embarrassed. They don't want to seem like they're being cheap. They may not even realize they have a legal right to complain about anything.
or they may not know who to complain to.
Precisely. I dare say we probably hear more complaints in my office than any regulatory agency that deals with funeral and cremation issues.
So this national bill that will this bill 900, when might it come up for discussion?
Oh, I wish I knew. In the last Congress, we had an identical bill, and then the Congress expired and turned over, and so did the bill. I'm hoping that in this Congress it will come up, but it's been surprisingly difficult to get traction. This should not be a really difficult thing to do. It shouldn't be that controversial. It would merely require cemeteries to give customers printed price lists, not misrepresent the law to customers in order to sell them things that they don't need, and to allow people freedom of choice in purchasing things like a marker or a headstone, either from the cemetery or from an outside business. I mean, this is just basic good sense, but we're not getting much traction on it. And, you know, these things come up when there are scandals. I mean, a lot of people listening probably remember hearing about the Burr Oak scandal in Chicago, where, you know, the cemetery was found to be digging up graves and reselling them. And it was that scandal that prompted Congressman Bobby Rush to introduce the bill. And I have to give a lot of credit to their staff. I mean, they specifically said, hey, we know that these headline-grabbing scandals will happen from time to time, but that there are other things going on underneath the radar, and that's what we want Funeral Consumers Alliance to talk about. And so we did. We submitted written testimony. I testified before the committee. And it seems as though when the news cycle wears off, interest in regulation in this business wears off.
And, of course, industry folks have regular lobbyists who are helping congresspeople pay their bills.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, we are, you know, I'm the director of a national organization, but that national organization has two full-time staff and one part-time person, and I'm one of those two full-time staff. So we are very non-profit. We do a lot with a little. We certainly don't have the money to pay people to go to Washington and represent our interests, but the industry certainly does.
And do fundraisers for Congress folks, right?
No, we are explicitly nonpartisan, nonsectarian. Don't get involved. Wouldn't even do that if we were allowed to.
Let me remind listeners that this is a live call-in show, and you're listening on the 8th of April, Sunday night, between 5 and 6 Central Time. Of course, there'll be many listeners who will download this program when it's in the archives and will hear it at their convenience. But for people who are listening live right now on your radio or perhaps online on your computer device somewhere in the world, you may call us. There's a 800 number that's toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And your call will be put into our studio here where we have our guest, Reverend Peter Dick and Josh Slocum in Vermont. We'll be able to answer your questions or listen to your comments and respond. When you call that number, our technical director, Kyle Crowell, will answer the phone and put you in line to be on the studio. We do ask you to turn your radio down when you're on the air because there is a delay of a few seconds between when you're actually speaking and when your comment goes on the air. Let me give that number again. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455. That's 222-WILL. For local listeners in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, in the 217 area code, punch in 333-9455, and those are local lines which will put you in touch with our guests here on Keeping the Faith today. We are always eager to have listeners make comments, and if you want to make a comment and not actually be on the air, you could make that comment to our engineer, and she will get it to me via computer. Well, let's talk a little bit about the local situation. Peter Dick, what does the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Champaign County do as an example of the local groups that are scattered throughout Illinois and Indiana?
Well, at present, one of our major projects is to collect information about local mortuary services as well as cemetery services. And we publish that once a year as a newsletter that goes out prior to our annual meeting, which I just wanted to make sure everyone knew is on Tuesday, May the 22nd, 7 p.m. at Provena Covenant Medical Center auditoriums.
Tuesday rather than Monday. Usually it's been on a Monday, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, we have to negotiate
spaces. These meeting times, all right? Yeah. Tuesday, May 22nd. What time was that again?
7 p.m.
And that's at Provena Covenant.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's open to anyone?
Anyone is welcome to come. We'll have displays of materials that that are forwarded to us from the National Association, thanks to Josh and his people. And we usually invite a special speaker. And that, of course, this year will be Josh Slocum himself.
We will put the fun back in funerals, so come on out.
A little pun there, yes.
Yes, yeah.
So no, what are you going to talk about, Josh, when you're here? What has the local group asked you to address?
Well, you know, these things are going to change on the fly, but I think what I'm going to talk about is we'll do some basic funeral education. You know, everything you thought you know about funerals is usually wrong, is one place I start out. And depending on, you know, the temperature of the audience, you know, I throw out a few questions to test where people are. For example, did you realize it's legal to purchase your own casket or build your own casket rather than buy one from the funeral home? Did you know that embalming is not usually required by law? Based on what the audience says to me, then we can tailor it around that. But a lot of what I'm going to talk about comes from my recently published book called Final Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, that was co-written with Lisa Carlson, a well-known consumer advocate who was the executive director before I was. And the book is kind of a two-parter. It really is. It's an expose of the funeral and cemetery business, what's wrong with it, what's right with it, and how to be an informed consumer on everything from full-service funerals to simple cremations, prepayment scams, dealing with cemeteries, all of that. But the second part of the book is practical information. There's a chapter for every state. So there are 51 chapters, including District of Columbia, and what we do is we round up the funeral and burial laws and consumer protections, and we put them into plain English for the lay reader. So if you go to the Illinois chapter, for example, you'll find references to statute and plain English explanations of who governs the funeral industry, where to complain, the fact that there's a 24-hour wait prior to cremation, things like that. So I'm going to talk about some things that could be changed and updated in Illinois and some things we'd like to see happening on the legislative front as well.
Peter, you were telling us about in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area for this county, the annual meeting is May 22nd. Now, this group doesn't meet regularly. It meets annually, once a year. And what do you try to do in these annual meetings? This time you're bringing Josh Slocum to answer these kind of questions he's just been discussing. What other things does this local group do?
We have broadened our interest in actually like completing the end as we complete our lives, information that can help us to have a more of a say in how we want things to go. For example, we will be offering available to group presentations the document Five Wishes, which has been a national effort on the part of an organization that tries to equip people in terms of making end-of-life decisions and advocating, like self-advocating on the part of the consumer, what they want to have done, what they don't want to have done. That's one thing. We have also in the past offered some good information about, for example, advanced medical directives and assisting people to complete those. Now, hospitals are required as part of the certification process to have some documentation on the patient's chart as to who the decision maker is. We also talked about hospice work. We also talked about palliative care, education presentations. Yeah.
If I could, I want to put a second in there to how important it is. Peter mentioned advanced directives. That's one of the really excellent things that a group like the Champaign-Urbana organization does. These are really, really important. And too few Americans have actually sat down and written out their wishes in terms of whether they want life-sustaining measures taken in terminal illness, what they want for funeral plans. And I have to make a confession. In December of 2010, I had been the executive director of this organization for several years at that point. And out of the blue at 36, I had a heart attack and had to go get a stent put in my heart. And as I was being wheeled into the cardiac lab, somewhat loopy and goofy with morphine, thank goodness, Lisa Carlson, my co-author, was walking beside me, and she said, "Where are your advanced directives?" And like a fool, I said, "I don't know." And I won't say on the air what she said to me. But you can imagine, even I, who should know better, had not organized these documents in a way that was helpful. So people should understand this is not a group or a topic that is only for old folks. You know, even if, you know, hopefully you, you know, your younger listeners will not have to go through what I did, and certainly I'm lucky to have lived. But people will also be dealing with the deaths of their parents and grandparents. This is not something that is that you're going to be able to avoid. Dealing with end of life and dealing with the funeral industry, you're not going to be able to avoid that until you're 70 years old. It is going to happen. So this is, you know, our mission is to help families and households, because death is a part of life, and it is going to happen. And sadly, most of us are absolutely unprepared for it, and the bill that we pay the funeral industry certainly shows that.
We have a caller waiting on line number one who wants to talk with our two guests today. Let me introduce them again. We're talking with Josh Slocum from he's the National Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, and the Reverend Peter Dick, who is a pastoral minister at Provena Covenant Hospital and president of the Champaign County Funeral Consumers Alliance. Yes, you're on the air, line one. Go right ahead.
Okay. A number of years back, a nine-month-old child of ours died, and in the course of whatever did happen, we simply had the body cremated and sent to us in a tin. The funeral director was upset because if we had been on state aid or something or another, he would have had a lot more money. How does various bits of aid and assistance screw up things, which is what I usually figure that they do? But then even more important, if as a body parts donor, one indicates that, one's cadaver is available for any use that is directed, how do you get that word to all the places that should get it? Art schools, veterinary units, whatever. We run into the problem also of, like with Alistair Cook, the television guy who happened to die a number of years ago, unknown to him and to everybody else, without a body parts release, he was harvested, and unfortunately, he happened to have an immune response problem. I think I've given you a whole lot.
Okay, you've given us at least three issues. So let's let Josh Slocum respond.
Okay, those are all really good questions, because they're common and people ask them a lot. Let me take them one by one. First, in terms of assistance, financial aid, if you die poor, this varies around the country. But in Illinois, it comes from the state. Some places it comes from the county. It comes from the state in Illinois, and I believe, the last I checked, that there's about $1,100 available for funeral costs and an additional $552 for the cemetery costs. I don't know what one has to do to qualify. I assume that there is an income test. So it's not a great deal of money. And in some states, there's there's none at all.
But it sounds like our caller experienced the fact that if he paid himself, he actually didn't have to pay even that much for a simple cremation.
Right. Well, you know, I've seen both sides of it. I have seen funeral homes that take advantage of systems in states where they're slightly more generous. But I've also seen funeral homes that have, you know, taken a real loss helping folks out because there isn't any money to come from the state. So I have seen the good and the bad. When it comes to body donation, this is a really important distinction for people to understand. Organ donation is not the same thing as whole body donation to a medical school. They are mutually exclusive.
It has to be one or the other.
It has to be one or the other. Organ donation, about 1% of us are going to die in such a way that we will be, our organs can be used. You basically have to be declared brain dead, and you need to be on a ventilator in the hospital. So it's a minority of us who will be able to donate our organs. We certainly encourage people to make that known if they want to. But if you want to do whole body donation, what you need to do is talk to the medical schools. All of them have, you can either get it online or call them, and they can send you an enrollment packet in the mail that will describe, you know, the process. And they usually want you to pre-register, and they want people, they're not going to take cases where the person has HIV, hepatitis C, disfiguring accident, a lot of cancer. They basically want a body that is as typical as possible for study. You should definitely make copies of this paperwork and give them to your family. Have this conversation with them, even if it's not about body donation.
And also to your attorney?
Sure, but it's more important that the people who have, the people who are first going to be notified about your death and carry out your wishes, they need to have this, because no medical school is really going to take, even if you pre-register, if your kids or survivors object to it, they're not going to take your body.
Okay.
And
Peter, it sounds like you have a comment to make on this point the listener raised.
Yes, a couple of things. Unfortunately, in the state of Illinois, the financial assistance has dried up from the state. And so there is a real issue that a lot of us are concerned about as to that those funds, which at one time, Josh was right, that was what was going on in Illinois. But as of last year, we were informed that those funds have dried up. And and secondly, unfortunately, and also if a person has a power of attorney for health care in place, the person's decision maker, or we call them an agent, that person does have the authority to dispose of the body the way that they have been instructed to do that by the individual. And so that there's also a question on the power of attorney for healthcare document that stipulates as to, or substantiates rather, that's the person's wish to have either all the organs or any and all organs donated or not.
And the caller who rung off to listen on offline did ask raised a third issue about a rather famous case, apparently Alistair Cook, whose organs were harvested without family realizing that he had autoimmune disease.
Well, yes, he was referring to Alistair Cook's body was unfortunately caught up in one of the body parts scandals a few years ago, the for-profit tissue companies that collect tissue and bone had done so without the family's permission. I want to tie on, Peter, thank you for correcting me and obviously for the listeners about the state aid. That's troubling. Here's an example of some change that needs to happen in Illinois. Perversely, you are not allowed in this state to conduct your own funeral for your family instead of hiring a funeral home. Now, this is going to sound unusual to most of your listeners, but if we remember that 100, 120 years ago, it was extremely common for the dead to be cared for at home by the family, laid out at home, and buried simply. It was the 20th century where the commercial funeral business really took over all aspects of this. There are only 8 states in the country that stand in the way of people doing what is, you know, you might call a pioneer burial. The Amish practice this in many places. But, you know, I think it's really sort of ironic that there's no more aid from the state to help people pay for funerals if they're poor. But the law stands in their way and says they can't do it for themselves. So in Illinois, the dead literally become hostages of the commercial funeral industry. And it's only due to a really tiny section of administrative code and a definition that needs to be changed. So this is an example of the sort of thing that we do to try to advocate for people and the sort of thing that local groups like the Champaign-Urbana group are in a good position to help out with. So if there are people who are interested in taking that right back, I'm sure that we'd be happy to hear from them.
Let's share the information of how people who would like to contact the national office can do that. Give us a phone number and email. I do know that your website is funerals.org.
Yep. Our telephone number, yeah, just if folks can remember funerals, make sure you have the S on funerals, funerals.org. You will always be able to find me. And my email is very simply josh@funerals.org. And our telephone number is 802-865-8300.
Let me repeat that. Funerals.org is the website. Josh can be contacted directly through email, josh@funerals.org. Or you may call him during business hours, 802-865-8300. We're getting close to halfway through our program, and I see that someone has, our technical engineer has sent me a detailed email with some information about a situation that I want to share right after we have a short break. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Today we're talking by phone with Josh Slocum, that's S-L-O-C-U-M, the co-author of a recent book, Final Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, with Lisa, is it Carlson or Carlson?
Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N.
And who published that?
It's small Vermont publisher, Upper Access Publishing.
Thank you. And in our studio is Reverend Peter Dick, who's pastoral minister at Provena Covenant Hospital, part of the Presence Health System. He's an ordained Mennonite minister, and as a volunteer, he's the president of the Champaign County Funeral Consumers Alliance. So we're talking about issues of death and funerals and expenses and cemeteries and those sorts of things. And we'll be continuing with another 30 minutes in just a moment. However, let me do let listeners know what's coming up on Keeping the Faith in the next few weeks. Next week, we'll be talking about Earth Care, a special program being done by a local congregation here in Champaign-Urbana, the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana. Their pastor, Reverend Dr. Catherine Cusmall, will be one of our guests, along with David Sherwood, talking about Earth Care. On April 22nd, we have a very special program. It's an archive program. Back in 1999, when this program had just begun, I was privileged to interview a former high school classmate of mine, Roger Ebert, the internationally known Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic from the Chicago Sun-Times, about religious themes in movies. And Roger, of course, has an encyclopedic knowledge of films, and we had a good hour conversation about religious themes, spiritual themes in movies. And it happened that was just the week or two before his very first Overlooked Film Festival at the Virginia Theater here in Champaign, Illinois. And that's coming up again this April, and in fact, we're going to be playing this the Sunday before that festival starts. Many listeners know that Roger sadly lost his ability to speak several years ago from throat cancer of the throat. And he's actually quite excited that we found this long-lost recording of his conversation on this theme from 1999, because he's able to put his old voice into his new computer electronically as he finds words and phrases that he's used in one place that's been recorded that he can put in his computer and use that as he types in what he says today. So it comes out in his own speaking, old speaking voice. So we're very pleased that we found this and we're able to convert it to our new digital system and make a copy available to Roger. But we're going to be playing that whole interview on April 22nd. On April 29, Axel Gehrman from Unitarian Universalist Church will be talking about some of the current Wall Street protests with guest host Professor Don Nolan. May 6, Joan Bailey will be here talking about how to make teaching adult Sunday school classes exciting. We have two artists coming up later, one in May 13 and one in May 27. Steve Gilday will be talking about art and values in relation to Japan and its influence on art in this country. John David Mooney from Chicago will be talking with us about physics and the arts. John David Mooney, who's well known around the world for creating wonderful light sculptures and things that are very involve a lot of technology. So John David Mooney, M-O-O-N-E-Y, on May 27. Those are some of the guests coming up ahead on Keeping the Faith. Let me say just a couple words about programs at the University YMCA, who has long time been a sponsor of these Keeping the Faith programs, a longtime supporter. The very last Friday Forum will be coming up at the University Y this April 13. The whole series this semester has been on creative approaches to global development. And the last speaker will be the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research at the University of Illinois, Mark Weisbrot. He'll be talking about debts and deficits, combating recession in the U.S. and Latin America, and in the Eurozone. And speaking of the Eurozone, I might say that I'm very pleased that we have a silent guest in our studio today, a guest from Germany. He is the leader of a six-person team sponsored by Rotary International and the Rotary Clubs of Germany and this part of Illinois. And he is a pharmacist in Germany, but he's brought a team of young professionals from Germany to be in central Illinois in various Rotary clubs and learning about life here in this part of the world. And we're very happy to have him listening in on this program. He's going to be here. Is it 4 weeks? 4 weeks traveling around, and so you may see part of this group here. Another thing about the Y before I leave that. The current art exhibit at the University Y, which is on the corner of Wright and Chalmers in Champaign, right across from Lincoln Hall at the university. The art exhibit currently is by Ramiro Rodriguez, and it's called Caritas, The Immigrant, the Word, and Life. That will be up until April 19. A new exhibit will start on Thursday. There'll be a gallery opening that evening from 5 to 7. And this is called Masquerade, an exhibition dealing with issues of concealment and perception. It includes works by several artists, Brett Eaton, Sarah Spread, Lauren Martinkus, Kelsey Arnould, all from the School of Art and Design at the University of Illinois. So the exhibition opens April 19. Your public is invited from 5 to 7. And it'll be at the Y all the way until May 3rd. So you feel free to go by to the Y anytime to see that. It's on the first floor in the Murphy Gallery. Well, let's get back to our guests, Josh Slocum in Vermont by phone and Peter Dick here in the studio. Peter's last name is spelled D-Y-C-K. Slocum is S-L-O-C-U-M. Let me share with you what someone has communicated by computer here. Our engineer has sent it on to me. My mom bought two prepaid plans for their funeral from their funeral home back in 92. Mom passed away in 93, and the family had been under the impression that they still had a prepaid plan in existence for their father, who is now 91 years old. However, the funeral director was implicated in a prepaid scam, an embezzlement, and destroyed records prior to his suicide, as the police were actually on the way to arrest him for this embezzlement. One of the questions, is there a victim's assistance fund anywhere for people who are in that situation, who seemingly have, they've paid for a plan and now the person's, that money's been stolen, the people who've taken over the funeral home say they're not responsible. Is there anybody anywhere who can help? Josh.
Yes. In Illinois, and caveat here, I don't know exactly which cases this might apply to, but there is something called the Cemetery and Funeral Consumer Protection Fund. Actually, it may be two different ones, cemetery and funeral, that are supposed to make whole consumers who've been a victim of a scam. I would contact the comptroller's office to find out about this, and it's definitely...
That's the comptroller of the state of Illinois.
Correct.
All right.
And, I'm awfully sorry to hear that happened. This illustrates one of the reasons why our organizations do not recommend prepayment in most situations. If a person is going on Medicaid and has to spend down their assets to qualify, a prepaid funeral is one way that they can shelter some of that money, and it may be a good idea. But in all other cases, we find that planning ahead without paying ahead is often safer for your money. You keep the money in your own bank account. You can set up a fund at the bank designated as payable on death, and you can name a survivor to have those funds. People who prepay do so almost always for the same reasons. They tell me, you know, I wanted to make sure that my kids wouldn't have to deal with this. Well, the reality is your kids are going to have to deal with your death, and paying for it ahead of time, perversely, can actually make it more difficult, because I talk to your kids, as it were, when they call, and they say, Dad said everything was taken care of at the mortuary, but we went down there and we realized that there are cemetery costs, or the casket that Dad picked out isn't available anymore, and they want more money. What this does, unfortunately, is it kind of treats the kids as if they were still in kindergarten, right? And instead of teaching them what you want, how to shop for a funeral, what your rights are, and how to carry it out, Mom and Dad go down to the funeral home, and they hand a check over to the nice man there. And, you know, most funeral homes are not crooks. Most of them are not going to steal your money. That's not the big issue. But we leave our children unprepared to make decisions. There will always be decisions to be made, and Mom and Dad might be vacationing in Florida. What good will a prepaid cremation in Champaign do them if they die in Florida? So, you know, really think twice, three or four times before you prepay.
Peter, any experience locally?
None, except that I know I'm speaking to an insurance agent that I'm also a friend, that there are certain insurance products that can be purchased in advance and with a special arrangement for the beneficiaries of that policy. To be those funds to be used for the funeral expenses.
Let me give the phone numbers again for others who might like to ask a question on the air or off the air. Either way, you can talk to our off-the-air technical director, Kyle Croa, or you can have her put you through to the studio. In the Champaign-Urbana, the local numbers, 333-9455, that's 333-WILL. If you're in the 217 area code, a local call. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. We're always eager to have people ask questions or make comments. One follow-up that I got from the computer correspondence, are there funeral directors who will work pro bono with a family interceding with, say, an insurance company. If they have documents that clearly show that they paid for this, and they should be provided a service.
Well, that depends on the individual funeral home. What I would say is don't expect it. It is not something that funeral homes have to do. But it is worth checking. I know that in some cases, this has happened here in Vermont when, sometime in the past decade, we had a similar situation where a lot of pre-need money was stolen. And some of the funeral directors stepped in and committed to carrying out the funerals that these folks had paid for at their competitors, which was a nice thing to do. And, of course, it's also good community publicity for them. So it's worth checking out. You might want to talk to the State Funeral Directors Association, the Illinois Funeral Directors Association. Google for them, and you'll get their contact information. If there are such funeral homes, that organization likely knows, but do not count on it.
And what about making this public in some way, perhaps a letter to the newspaper, so that perhaps religious organizations, particularly in a state like Illinois, that's desperately poor right now throughout the state government and doesn't have funds to be helpful, might religious organizations be able to step forward and provide services for particularly poor families who have had something like this happen?
That certainly would be a great opportunity. We haven't begun. We are hoping to. Our alliance, is seeking to establish new, do some networking with area churches, both to see that as the place where we can recruit new members, and also to provide new services, but also raise the question about what is, in these days, if we are paying more attention to Christian stewardship of environmental resources, how appropriate is it to spend many, many thousands of dollars on placing the remains of someone into the ground to be preserved for the rest of eternity? I mean, is that really part of your theological stand? Is that what your belief leads you to? I mean, there have been a lot of societal pressures that have forced people to keep up with the Joneses or whoever is being buried and make sure that your coffin is as nice as that other one was. But maybe that's an opportunity, I think, for the local ecumenical organizations to begin some discussions.
What are some alternatives that people might want to consider to embalming and casketing and putting in a vault and going to a very expensive cemetery and so on?
Well, Peter, I'm so glad you brought that up. That is a really, really crucial point. You're a minister. I'm not, so I can't speak to your experience, but I'm betting that you have had the experience I have where people will contact us and say, I want a Christian funeral, and they think that a Christian funeral is an embalmed body on public display and a mass-manufactured casket and a hearse to the cemetery, and basically a full-service funeral. And I know of no religious roots that the contemporary American commercial funeral can trace itself back to, and I think it's really crucial for religious communities to do more than many of them are doing. Some of them have bereavement committees, but that's sort of going after the horse after you left the barn door open. I think that educating people about their options is a part of ministerial care that is neglected and could really be helpful financially and to give people different kinds of funerals. You asked about alternatives. Well, of course, there's always cremation, but people need to remember that federal law gives you the right to itemize your own funeral from the funeral home, so you don't have to take a package. Funeral homes will frequently goad you to look at what they call their traditional funeral, and every time you see the word traditional at a funeral home, do a mental strike through and substitute profitable, because it usually means one of everything off the menu. But you can say, hey, we want burial, but we don't want embalming or viewing, so we're going to have a closed casket. Or you can say, ask the funeral home if they will offer a private family viewing without embalming, which is less formal, a little more intimate and less costly. And of course, the casket itself, what a lot of people don't know is that there's no state law anywhere in this nation that even requires a casket as a condition of burial. Same thing with vaults. These are maybe practical requirements, but they're not legal requirements.
Cemeteries require a vault so they won't have problems with graves collapsing.
Settling,
right?
Yes, correct. But anything, you know, when people ask about caskets, I always tell them, buy what appeals to you, what appeals to your eye and what fits your budget, and don't consider anything else. Because regardless of how thick the metal is, whether it's sealed or not, none of them will keep a body from going back to the earth. None of them are going to keep water out or air out. A lot of times, you know, any honest cemetery worker will tell you that, you know, a casket buried a couple of months ago that was supposed to be sealed might well be full of water. I mean, the reality is people, you know, I think that when folks stop to think about it, they realize that, you know, whatever your religious beliefs or lack thereof might be, what's left is what we call the remains. It's what's left, and we all go back to the earth. So don't feel like you're letting, you know, you're disappointing or insulting your loved one by buying something very modest.
Let me share a positive experience with a funeral home and a funeral director. My mother died in December, and we had thought about things in advance because of the help of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, both nationally and locally. And we had purchased an inexpensive casket, which is what my mother wanted. She chose not to be embalmed. She chose to be buried within 24 hours. The funeral home did transport the body to the cemetery. The family had a graveside service that was quite moving and appropriate for what my mother chose. And the funeral director was very supportive, and it was very inexpensive. And yet we felt, they cared about us personally and were helpful to us, and it was a very moderately priced affair. Now, of course, we knew what to ask for, and we had some experience with this. But I do want to say there are funeral directors and funeral homes that are quite reasonable and quite helpful to people, even who don't want to spend a lot of money. We have another caller waiting on line one, number one. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about inexpensive funerals, and that's that I'd heard that some religions require very modest caskets with no metal on it at all, and that they're available at all funeral homes, but they don't like to advertise the fact. Is that true?
Two things. One, traditional Jewish practice and Muslim practice has been very simple coffin, if at all. A lot of the burials in Israel, for example, are shroud burial only. Kosher caskets are those that are made without metal and without animal glue. Funeral homes vary in what they actually stock. A lot of people say, I want the plain pine, you know, the proverbial plain pine box, but you won't find that in a lot of mortuaries. Some of them will have a good selection of everything from really low-end, modest stuff to really high-end. Some of them will focus on selling only the more expensive models, and yes, unfortunately, sometimes the inexpensive models are kept in the back boiler room. Ask the funeral home, if you don't see something that you can afford, ask them to look at their catalog, because most of them are doing business with very large casket companies that have a huge variety that can be delivered within 24 hours. So if you don't see something you can afford, ask.
Hmm. Do you want a follow-up caller?
No, but that 24-hour thing sounds like it'd be good enough. So thank you.
I do know in some cases it's hard to find exactly the cheapest casket within 24 hours. I don't know about now that things are bought online. Maybe that makes a difference. Peter, you're nodding your head.
There are a number of places where I've seen on Facebook where there's some clips of where there's a coffin that is even woven from old branches or by religious orders who are in the coffin business. There are some Amish workshops not far from here where that can be also be arranged for a simple wooden casket. So there are resources close at hand, and there's no great rush. I mean, most funeral homes are equipped now with cooling chambers where the body could be kept unembalmed for
several days.
Yes,
sure,
mm-hmm.
sure.
Yeah, and you can build your own too. I mean,
yes.
To me, what's very interesting is how simplicity and frugality and ecological consciousness can go together. I have had people who, have noticed that, a very simple wood coffin put together yourself comports with their idea of a religiously proper funeral, and it's inexpensive, and it doesn't use up a lot of resources. So people can be creative, and there's more than one way to do this. And that's one way that we can take some control both over the process and the cost. And I've known a lot of families that have made their own casket. Certainly isn't, it's a minority, but those who do, it actually becomes an important family experience. The kids might decorate it with paint. People will come by and put personal notes on the inside of it. So
you could use it as a coffee table, throw a quilt over it, use it as a bookcase until it's needed.
Oh, yeah. It's not a coffin until it has a body in it. Before that, it might be a hope chest or a linen closet.
We have several callers waiting. Let's go to our toll-free line number 4. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, very interesting and timely program. I would like to know whether either of your guests have newsletters which would be available. And where could they get them?
Yes. Peter, you want to go first?
Well, we don't have a regular newsletter. I mean, it's published once a year, and that will be coming out just prior to our annual meeting on May the 22nd. There is a website that both we are linked through the national website.
Yeah, and we put out a newsletter 3 times a year, and I do a lot of blog posting and a lot of electronic updates. Go to funerals.org, and you can look up, you can click on the membership button and see what we offer.
Okay.
You can also find the local group through our site.
A couple more callers waiting. Let's go to line number 2.
No, coming back to the shipping of bodies, how does the body get from the coroner's office to any funeral room, and then what is the problem with putting the body in a sack or wrapping it or whatever you would like to call it, putting it in a box, and then mailing it or shipping it by truck to a crematorium?
All right, let's hear answers to those 2 questions. Josh?
Okay. First, most bodies don't go to the coroner's office. That's television. It's not reality. If you're in a hospital and your death is expected or you die at home, usually you go directly to the funeral home. Coroner's cases are generally those that are suspicious or traumatic, so not most of them. Secondly, there's no practical barrier to disposition like that, but the problem is the laws in Illinois prevent families from getting the paperwork that they need to legally transport the body. That's restricted to funeral directors. In addition, most crematories in a state like Illinois where that's the case are not going to work directly with consumers, unfortunately. This is why we need social action and political change, not just education.
Can one do a shroud burial in Illinois, for example, or Indiana?
Yes. No state requires a coffin. You can definitely use a shroud. Most cemeteries will require at least a concrete vault. It's worth asking beforehand. But if you're going to do a shroud burial, it's usually a good idea at least to have what funeral homes will call an alternative container, a reinforced cardboard box that it makes the body able to be transported. It doesn't necessarily have to be buried in that. But yes, that is certainly possible.
And we have another caller, if they're quick, on line number 1. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, line number 1.
Yes, I'd like to ask, I think probably Reverend Dick might know this, that since he's local, are there any funeral homes in Champaign, Urbana, that offer green burial? And if so, who are they? Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, yes, to the best of my knowledge, there is one, and that would be the Heath Vaughn Funeral Home in Champaign has advertised.
That's H-E-A-T-H Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N.
Mm-hmm. And having had conversations with Mr. Vaughn, the information I have is sketchy. However, they are interested in trying to work with the consumer about possibilities that fall into the catchword green.
And what is a green burial?
Go ahead,
Josh.
Remember, green is about what you don't buy. It's not buying a special thing. So at any funeral home, you can be greener. Choose no embalming. Choose an immediate or direct burial. And choose either a simple wood coffin or an alternative container that's usually used for cremation. Then you've skipped all of the resources and the chemicals. The cemetery, on the other hand, I don't know what your green cemetery situation is like, but it's worth asking your municipal and your private cemeteries if they have a section that you can be buried directly in the earth without a vault, or if not, maybe they'll consider starting one.
We're down to our last 30 seconds. Peter, anything else locally?
No, things are very, very exciting. I think we have a lot of education to do and to discover new resources in the community.
Let me remind listeners to learn more. You may go to the website of the Funeral Consumers Alliance nationally by going to funerals.org. If you do not have access to a computer, their phone number is 802-865-8300. Email can be sent to Josh, J-O-S-H, at funerals.org. Josh's most recent book is Final Rites, R-I-G-H-T-S, co-authored with Lisa Carlson. Josh Slocum is spelled S-L-O-C-U-M. Reverend Peter Dick is our local president of the Funeral Consumers Alliance. Peter is one of the pastoral ministers at Provena Covenant Hospital in Urbana, part of the Presence Health System. He's an ordained Mennonite minister and, as I say, president of the local FCA. Their annual meeting will be May 22nd at Provena Covenant Hospital on just off University Avenue in Urbana, 7 p.m. May 22nd. That's a Tuesday. And Josh Slocum will be the featured speaker. There'll also be a time for questions and answers at that time. And that is a free meeting open to the public. I want to thank all of our callers and, of course, our two guests for being on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Next week, we'll be talking with David Sherwood and Reverend Dr. Catherine Cusmull about earth care from the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana. The following week, April 22nd, a very special archive interview from 1999 with Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic Roger Ebert. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Support comes from 40 North 88 West, presenting the 10th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 19th through 22nd. With venues throughout the county, the festival, in conjunction with the local business community, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, culture, and theater. Information on this year's festival is at 40north.org.
This is Illinois Public Media, WIL.